Well, as we continue on, I was just thinking this is the third week now that we've been looking at this book of Numbers. And again, I know, I recognize that Numbers is not a book that most of us spend a lot of time in. In fact, you may not even know exactly where it is. We've been talking about that these last few weeks as we've been walking through, or what Numbers is about. You might be able to find it because maybe you know that it's the fourth book in the Bible, but you may not know what it's about. And if that's the case, this is what this series has been about. It's been looking at ways that we can find guidance and help, not just from what happened in the past, but how that has been put in this Bible for us to encourage us in the midst of our present. It's called Numbers because there are two main census of the children of Israel a long, long time ago. First one is at the beginning of the book. The second one is at the end of the book. But in the middle of the book is the story of the children of Israel during the 40 years of their wandering in the wilderness. Now, I don't know about you for sure, but I know a lot of us feel a sense of we're wandering in a wilderness time. And so this book begins to take on a little bit more meaning for us, maybe than we would have normally thought. In here we hear ancient stories about people that we maybe heard of, but we don't really know too much about them. Or maybe we know some, but maybe we don't know these stories. And I want to just focus on a couple here, not just today and going into the next few weeks, but Jose and I actually will be working on a couple of different messages that are going to come out of these texts as we move forward and try to understand what is God trying to tell us as we go forward. Some of the key characters in the book of Numbers, though you might not call him a character, is God. Obviously, the main character is in the story is God, as you see God at work with his people. Next to God, if you're saying who is the most prominent character in the book, that would be the man named Moses. Now, Moses runs across a lot of these books here in the early going. In fact, these first five books, the Torah, as the Jews would call them, sometimes gets referred to as the five books of Moses because he plays such a key role. From the second book, Exodus, through Deuteronomy, we see that Moses is the key figure. And of course, Numbers falls right in that camp. And so Moses becomes that key figure for us. Also, we're going to see Caleb and Joshua, another couple of folks who play secondary roles, but really key secondary roles in the children of Israel getting ready to move from the wilderness experience into the promised land. Now, we'll be looking at them next week, right, Jose? Tell me, Caleb and Joshua, right? All right, good, because that's where we're going next week as we move on into chapter 13. Some great stuff there, and we're going to be hearing more and more about Caleb and Joshua as they go forward. Again, secondary characters, key characters. But today I want to look at, these are some other key characters, and their names are Aaron and Miriam. Now, Aaron and Miriam, for those of us who know a little bit about this early part of the Bible, if we had read back in Exodus, maybe you recognize those names, because these are two of the leaders of the children of Israel. They happen also to be siblings along with Moses. The three of them are siblings, two brothers and a sister. Now, according to the Exodus story of Moses, Moses wasn't around for his childhood. He was raised in the palace, and you probably know that story of being placed in the river and saved from the river and raised in Pharaoh's palace. But here's a photo. It's old. It's black and white. You know, the technology wasn't so good back, 4,000 years ago, and so, the pixels aren't very clear. I kind of like this picture because you can see there's Aaron on the left, Miriam in the middle, and Moses on the right. And, of course, Aaron and Moses look like they're 85, 90, 100 years old, don't they? Miriam looks like she's 25. How does she look so good? I don't know. That's one of the old photos. Maybe you've seen photos like this. Maybe this one here you're more familiar with. Brings it into, yes, you know this one? You've seen this one? Okay, so you know the story, the Prince of Egypt. That is kind of focused on the same group of people. And so things like this kind of help us stay in tune with the Bible story. But we have to understand that it's just a part of this larger picture. And we're seeing part of that larger picture today. Yes, we see, actually, there's four characters in this. We have Aaron there right underneath his name. We have Moses in the middle. And we have Miriam to the right. And on the left is Moses' wife. Her name is Zipporah. And as you can tell, even from this photo, she doesn't look like she's part of the family, does she? That's going to be part of our story today as we move forward, and we're going to see how that all plays out. Okay, I want to read for you, and so if you have your Bibles open, I would encourage you to find Numbers 12, and here we're going to read the story. Again, this is God's story. We get to see some of these main characters, Moses and Aaron and Miriam, playing out. But it's God's story, and you'll see he plays a real significant role in it. He's not like he's a silent character. He's going to play a real significant role. But it's a story that becomes appropriate and, I think, important for all of us. Because we see here it's going to be conflict that God has to deal with, conflict in the community. Because we, as people made for community, find ourselves often dealing with conflict ourselves. And so we see here that it's not new to us, but we're going to see how seriously God takes this conflict of how it is that we often use our words to wound one another rather than our words to heal one another. And as we do, God takes that seriously. So in verse 1, it begins with this. Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. "Has the Lord spoken only through Moses?" they asked. "Hasn't he also spoken through us?" And the Lord heard this. Now, before I go on into verse 3, this is one of the other things about these first five books. They're called the books of Moses, and for most people, we just assume that Moses was the author of them. That gets debated a little bit in scholarly circles because they say, well, how could he have written Deuteronomy being at before the close of the book of Deuteronomy, he dies, and we hear that story of what happened then in the immediate aftermath. And this actual verse in number 3 is one that I always question too. Did Moses write this about himself, or did someone else come along later, a narrator, and add this in? So the Lord heard what Aaron and Miriam were saying, and now, verse 3, now Moses was a very humble man, more humble than anyone else on the face of the earth. You know, for Moses' sake, I hope he didn't write that about himself. That would make me question it a little bit. So I really hope someone else came along later and said, you know, we're going to see Moses' humility on display here, and we don't want to miss it, because into the midst of this conflict, the answer is going to be a humble spirit. And that's what the writer is kind of placing here, giving us a clue to watch for this as this story plays out. The role of hurting words and the role of humility that brings healing. Okay? So at once the Lord said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, come out to the tent of meeting, all three of you. So the three of them went out, and the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud, and he stood at the entrance of the tent and summoned Aaron and Miriam. When the two of them stepped forward, he said, listen to my words. When there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, reveal myself to them in visions. I speak to them in dreams, but this is not true of my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak face to face, clearly, and not in riddles. He sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Lord burned against them, and he left them. And when the cloud lifted above the tent, Miriam's skin was leprous. It had become white as snow. Aaron turned and saw that she had defiling skin disease, and he said to Moses, please, my Lord, I asked you not to hold this against us, the sin we have so foolishly committed. Do not let her be like a stillborn infant coming from her mother's womb with its flesh eaten away. So Moses cried out to the Lord, please, God, heal her. And the Lord replied to Moses, if her father had spit in her face, would she not have been in disgrace for 7 days? Confine her outside the camp for 7 days, and after that she can be brought back. So Miriam was confined outside the camp for 7 days, and the people did not move until she was brought back. Now, I wanted to read that story because it is an interesting story. It is kind of a weird story. There's some interesting and odd stuff that we're not going to probably be a party to. This pillar of cloud which comes by, this voice of the Lord which speaks out, this miraculous disease which is put upon her and then is miraculously removed from her, and hearing God's heart and action in the place like this, this is something that we are not used to, but yet in the story, it is still making a point for us to clearly see. Because we too, don't we, fall into the trap of Miriam and Aaron. Miriam, in her backstory, she is a sister of Moses. She is a key leader in Israel. She's the one whose words are captured as the nation of Israel comes across the Red Sea on that after the Passover and the parting of the sea. It's her words of celebration that the scriptures contain as she speaks of God's deliverance. Aaron, we know him. He is the first of the priests. He is the one who does all these wonderful things, kind of partner, sidekick of Moses. Though at times he had some frailties, he's the one who built the golden calf, and a little peer pressure put him in a bad spot. So he's kind of got a little bit of a spotty record, but they're both good guys in the story. And yet in this story, even the good guys have flaws. And don't we all? And don't we all? Part of the flaws are found here in this opening of what's going on. They begin speaking against Moses. Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses. Why? What's that issue here? And don't we do this? We find reasons, don't we, to talk bad about others. I'm not just saying about our leaders or about prophets, but I'm talking about other folk, don't we? They find a couple different reasons that we're going to see here. Because his wife was a Cushite. Now, a Cushite could mean one of two things in a context of what we're looking at. When Moses left Egypt for that time, he was on the run before God called him to come and rescue his people out of Egypt. He left Egypt and went to a place over here called Midian. It is there he met who would become his father-in-law, Jethro. It is there where he met who would become his wife, Zipporah. They were from this land of Midian. Oftentimes they are referred to as Midianites. There's also a tribe that lived in Midian called the Cushan. So when they say that she was a Cushite, it could be referring to the fact that she was actually, though she was from Midian, she was part of this minority tribe, the Cushites, or the Cushans. Could be. Could be that Moses has another wife, that since he's gone back to Egypt, he took a second wife. And the second wife was from Cush. Cush was an area down below Egypt, upriver, the Nile, in the area we would today call Sudan or Ethiopia. And most times when someone is referred to as a Cushite in the Bible, and you see it a number of times, it refers to someone from that region of the world. So scholars, like you and me, we don't know. Are they referring to Zipporah because she came from over here, or are they referring to somebody else because she came from down that way? We don't know. But what we do know is that she was not one of the children of Israel. She was not one of them. And how easy it is for us to begin to look around and find reason to find fault in those who are not like us. We see it on the news. We see it in our neighborhood. We see it in our schools. We see it in our community, that when there's someone who thinks like us or thinks differently than us, acts differently than us, talks differently than us, dresses differently than us, we often want to put them in this camp of being not like us, and they become somehow other. And that's what's going on here. They're finding something that is an external to the who we are as a human being and drawing a line of demarcation, putting her in this camp and criticizing Moses because he is now married to this person who's not one of us. Put it in today's language, you might want to call that. In fact, let's go on a little further here, because what we see going on here, the heart of the problem is this. One is partly a racial bias or a racial prejudice, which is going to lead then to a racial division. That we often look around and we say, does their skin look like my skin? Do they come out of the same political party as I do? Do they come out of the same social economic class as I do? And if they don't, somehow they become other. And where we allow those divisions to grow and they become walls and barriers, then we begin to talk and we feel safe, because we talk to people who are like us, and we feel that we are somehow justified because those folks are not like us. And all that time, all we are doing is fomenting this division all the further. This is what's happening here, and Moses is in the middle of it. Now, it's not just that. It's not just that, because it's not just his wife that's at stake here. They are also jealous of him. And again, this is a lot of times why we begin speaking bad of other people around us, don't we? We have some beef with them. Maybe they do something that we don't care for, or maybe they got something that we would like. And somehow we begin to get jealous, we get envious, and all of a sudden we have divisions in our community as well. Notice with what Aaron and Miriam say, is that has not the Lord spoken to us as well? Why does Moses think he's the only one God speaks to? He speaks to us too. And there's this sibling rivalry going on. And this isn't new either, is it? How many of us know that there's a workplace rivalry, there's a sibling rivalry, we've got a hierarchy in the classroom, and some seem to be in the cool group, and some seem to be in the left out group, and there's all these divisions that go, and these words that begin to be spoken have a way of eating away at community, and really eating away at our heart. And finally, the third part here of this is we see that this is not even out in the open. No one else is hearing this. This is just gossip going between Miriam and Aaron. Moses hasn't even heard this stuff. But you know who did? God. And God wants to root that out. Friends, just because you're talking smack about somebody and they're never going to hear it because you're talking to someone who is safe and they agree with you and they're not going to say anything to anybody else, doesn't make it right. If we're talking smack about somebody, doesn't have to be a prophet. Say this, change these words a little bit. God says, how dare you do this about the one who I speak to? How about this? How dare we talk that way about people who also bear his image? If someone bears the image of God, how dare we speak against that person? Yes, we can speak against their thoughts. We can speak against their ideas. We can call their actions wrong or immoral or bad. Sure. But when we begin to tear into a personality simply because they're different from us, yet they bear the image of God, we are treading on thin ice. And we see that's what God takes so seriously. These words that have the potential to hurt. Now, I don't know about you. I remember as a kid, I heard this saying. Maybe someone else is old like me. Sticks and stones may break my bones. Anyone else know that one? But words can never hurt me. BS. Yeah. Who else has said that? Nobody. Fantastic. I'm the only hypocrite here. I said it, and it was not true. Words still have a way of crushing our spirit, don't they? And I think that's what this message is about, that as we live in weird times, as we wander in this time of here but yet not there yet, as we walk through this time, we have to see that this is common for us as humanity, that we find ways that we do things just out of our broken sin nature that have a way of hurting others. And even if they don't ever hear it, like Moses didn't hear these words, God says, be careful of your heart, because those words have a way of affecting you and diminishing you as you speak those words against someone who bears his image. In the New Testament, Paul kind of picks up on the same theme. In Galatians 5, he says this, you, my brothers and sisters, you are called to be free, beautiful. Do not use your freedom to indulge your flesh, but rather serve one another humbly. There's that word humble again. Humbly in love. For the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this one command, to love your neighbor as you love yourself. But now hear where Paul goes with that. He's calling us to love, but then the warning follows. If you bite and devour each other. He's not talking about cannibalism. What's he talking about? He's talking about the way we talk about one another, how we talk to one another, and what that does not only to them, but what it does to us. If you bite and devour each other, watch out, or you will be destroyed by each other. There's a call to love. There's a warning not to speak badly of one another. In the story we read out of Numbers, we see there is a call to be united. And then God's reaction to these words that bring wounding and hurt. And it puts Moses in a funny spot. Here's the words that heal. Aaron turns to Moses and says, "We screwed up. We shouldn't have talked bad about you. That was on us. Pray that we'll be healed. Pray that we'll be forgiven." How easy it is for us to hold a grudge when someone has spoken ill of you, spread rumors about you, falsehoods maybe that have gotten out now into the community that have besmirched your character. And now you have an opportunity to pay them back. Now you have an opportunity to nurse and hold that grudge. And what does Moses do? But prays for them, for their healing. There's a word for this, and it's called forgiveness. And it's a hard word for us, but we are invited to forgive as the Lord has forgiven us. And that's hard for us because we're not as perfect as the Lord is. But that's what he invites us to. In the midst of hearing those words, not only are we called to no longer speak those words, but even as we hear those words spoken against us, we are not called to retaliate or bring the heat back towards them. We are called instead to be a model of God in the midst of this broken world, and that means we are called to forgive. That is a word that heals. Whether it be in a marriage relationship, because words get spoken there, don't they? Whether it be in a workplace, whether it be just amongst friends or people who used to be friends, or in a church. These are the words that heal. Yeah, there are words that hurt, but these words of forgiveness are a powerful word that God invites us to embrace and to be in this world around us. I would like to pray over us that we would be those bearers, that God, as great as he is, has given us this gift of his forgiveness and invited us to share. And then I'll invite our team to come forward. And we'll close today as we look to him to be our help. Father, it is to you that we look. You are the author of forgiveness. It is that graceful nature of who you are as you extend that to us that enables us to proclaim how great you are to us. If all we were able to hear and receive and know would be your disappointment because of our failures, our disobedience, our lack, then how could we even call you good? But you seek to embrace us. You seek to call us to yourself, to make us your own. And then you invite us to be your body, Father, and be that same grace, that same forgiveness to those around us. God, I pray that you would help us to be mindful of our words, of how we speak, of what it does to our spirit, and how it can affect the lives of those around us. God, not only that we would be a model for others, but that we would be a representation of your goodness in the midst of those relationships that are so tricky for us. God, we would ask for your help. And God, we do proclaim how great you are and how thankful we are to be called yours. In Jesus' name, amen.